So I'm going to focus obviously on Yom Kippur tonight. Yom Kippur is coming up, as we all know. Yom Kippur is an incredible day, a day where there has so much potential for us to grow, to change, achieve in so many amazing ways as Jews. I want to understand a little bit of a deeper approach to Yom Kippur that will help us tap into the power of the day. We see Yom Kippur simply as a day of tshuva, a day of kapara. That's what we usually look at it. So we go through our list of mitzvos and averos that we've done. We try to take stock of our deeds and then, you know, work towards improving in the coming year. And that's the simple approach to Yom Kippur. But it's a day that goes far beyond that. It's a day on the calendar which, you know, Chazal look at as unique, you know, above the rest. The Torah itself gives us mitzvos Yom Kippur, which are very, very, you know, unique in that the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kosher Kedushim one time a year on Yom Kippur. That's it. So the day has much more to it than just a day of atonement and regret and tshuva. It's a day where the spirituality of the day kind of like goes beyond anything we can imagine the rest of the year. So we know Rosh Hashanah is a day of tshuva as well. Aseres Mitzvah for tshuva, Yom Kippur for tshuva. But how has Yom Kippur set itself apart as, you know, above and beyond the rest? What makes it so different than the rest of the days of tshuva? All of Elul we should be doing tshuva. You know, we talked about tshuva for the past, you know, month. But Yom Kippur is just a whole different world, and the question is why. So I want to go through a point. There's really two steps to this point. We'll see as we go through. And this point, to me, is one of the core ideas of Yom Kippur, which through this idea, we can really tap into the power of the day. So I want to begin with a question, which maybe you've heard before, maybe not. Totally unrelated to Yom Kippur. We'll get back to Yom Kippur in a minute. But Avram Avinu, we know in Lech Lecha, was chosen by Hashem, and he was told, leave your land, leave your family, go to Eretz Yisrael. So many Mefarshim asked the question, we don't know a thing about Avram Avinu before that. The Torah does not discuss who he was, why he was chosen. It just says, suddenly, V'yomer Hashem el Avram lech lecha. And you wonder, like, what did Avraham do to deserve that? Now, we can all fill in those blanks because we've learned the Midrashim, we've learned that Chazal give us kind of a background to his life. But the Torah is very mysterious. It says nothing about him. We know he was born. We know who his father was and who his brothers are, and that's about it. But suddenly he's chosen by Hashem to be like the founder of Klal Yisrael, and the Torah does not indicate why that was. So the Maharal talks about this point. And the Maharal says a very important concept. The Maharal says that Avraham Avinu, once he's chosen, he's not chosen based on his actions, because if so, if those actions ceased, he would be unchosen. We would lose that status as the chosen people. Rather, the love of Avraham Avinu is Ava She'ina Tluya B'davar, as Chazal say. It's a love which is not based upon anything. It's a love which is eternal. It's a love which cannot be ever canceled or but or eliminated in any way. And therefore, the Torah doesn't discuss his past. Because if I tell you his past, Avraham was great. He smashed idols. He stood up against everyone in his country. He went against his parents because they wanted him to worship idols. And he stood up for Hashem at all costs. We would say, okay, but if we don't do that, then we're not chosen as Jews. So Torah ignores all those actions. And the Torah tells us, no, Avraham is just told by Hashem, go. He is chosen. Why is he chosen? We don't know. Because that chosenness of Avraham Avinu is something which is immutable. It's eternal, and nothing can change that. Now, obviously, Avraham earned it. It wasn't like he was just a random, you know, Russia or something. Hashem, I choose you randomly. It wasn't a random thing. He earned it through his actions. But once he did those actions, once he developed in himself, you know, this level of devotion to Hashem, it became a permanent change in him, to the extent that it impacted not only himself, but his descendants for all of history. And once he had that change inside, even if we're not following in his footsteps, and we're not doing in his ways, and we're doing averos, that doesn't change what Avram accomplished. What he accomplished was so deep, was so far-reaching in the person, that became a permanent part of the genes of Klal Yisrael, and that doesn't change. So the Bechira, so the lesson Maharal points out to us here, is that the Bechira of Klal Yisrael is something which never changes, is eternal, goes on forever. And we're called Banim LaHashem Elokeichem, and we're Hashem's children. Just like the relationship of parent to child never changes. No matter what the child does, the parent loves the child, the relationship is always there. That's how Hashem views us. A child's a child no matter what, and we're Klal Yisrael no matter what. And even if we do go astray and we do the wrong things, Hashem always cares for us, loves us, and wants us back, regardless of what we've done. And that's all based on Avraham Avinu being chosen, based on what he did in his lifetime, and the Avos and the Imahos. But that's where it leaves us to this very day, that we're Hashem's children. And when you have that relationship of father to child or mother to child, then that is eternal, that doesn't change, that never goes anywhere. Just two different examples of this that we find, you know, in the Torah. The Rav Hirsch points out at the end of Parshas, I think it's Vayetze. So the very last we really hear of Rivka Imenu, it refers to her as Eim Yaakov Esav. This is Rivka, the mother of Yaakov and Esav. And Mepharshim struggle with, why is it repeating that? We already know that, you know, from a few Parshas past. We know who Esav and Yaakov's mother is. But the last we hear of Rivka in the Torah, you know, her, the final discussion of Rivka ends with the words Eim Yaakov Esav. So the Rav Hirsch says, that's because you might think that Rivka as a mother has rejected Esav and embraced Yaakov. We know that she loved Yaakov more, it seems. She helped him get the brachos. She knew who Esav was, knew what he did. But the Torah is telling us at the end, no. She was a mother to both her children. And if someone has a Yaakov, or they have an Esav, you're still a parent, these are still children, and you still love them and care for them in the ways that they both need. So Rivka, in a sense, was the ideal mother, because even though you might think, okay, she just rejects Esav, forget about him. The answer is no. She loved Esav and cared for him as well. And at the very end of the day, despite all that she did to get Yaakov to get the brachos and to reject Esav in that manner, she remained Esav's mother forever. That's what Rav Hirsch says. And that's this point. No matter whether we're Yaakov or you're an Esav, Hashem says, I love you because you're my children. That's what Hashem tells us. Another point I was thinking about on Rosh Hashanah is that one of the sources that we have for Tekiyah Shofar comes from Aim Sisra, Sisra's mother. Sisra in the Sefer Shoftim was a general who fought against Klal Yisrael, who we would view as a terrible Russia. And you know, he was killed by Yael. She brought him into his tent and killed him. But the Shiras Devora ends with the description of Aim Sisra, Sisra's mother, sitting there at the window, awaiting her precious son to return from battle. Now we'd say, wait a minute, this person is a terrible, wicked Russia. He murdered, you know, thousands of people, if not more. And but yet, the mother sits there and waits for sister to return. So, it could be she herself is Russia as well, I don't know. But you could also say, this is a mother. And whether or not your child is doing as you please, you still love your child, and you're concerned for him being out at war. And she sat there at the window waiting, when will my son Sisra come back? My dear, precious Sisra, when's he going to return from the war? And that's how the Shiras Devora ends. At Tekiyah Shofar, we learn from that, because it says, V'tayah bev eim Sisra, that she cried, she wailed, and Chazal referred to the true or the Shvarim as the Yavava, which is a type of cry, because we know that the Shofar sounds like crying, and that's one of the sources they bring as to describe the crying of the Shofar. But I would say there's a deeper message here. The deeper message is that just like Sisra's mother waited, when will my son return? So too Hashem waits for us. When will my children return? Even if we're acting like Sisra, you know, even if we're acting in wicked ways like Sisra, Hashem still waits for us to return. And that's one of the messages of the Shofar, that cry is the cry of a parent to a child saying, even though you've gone astray, I'm waiting for you to come back. So, you know, externally, we can't always see the cause for the love. You know, Avram Avinu, we understood why he was chosen, but Torah doesn't describe it. But as Klal Yisrael, as generations go on, sometimes we don't see why Hashem should love us. You know, whether it be as individuals or as a nation. You know, we do things which we shouldn't be doing, things are inappropriate, we go astray in many ways. But that love is always there. So if you look at the source sheet I gave out, look at number one. There's a pasuk in Sefer Malachi. And it says, Ahavti eschem amar Hashem. Hashem says, I love you. V'amartem b'ma ahavtanu. So you said, Klal Yisrael said, why do you love us? Hello, Ach Esav Yaakov Hashem Ve'Oev Es Yaakov. No, Hashem said, well, Esav and Yaakov are brothers, but I love Yaakov. Ves Esav Sanesi, but I hate Esav. Ve'asim Es Harav Shmama Ves Nachlosu Ve'Sanos Mibar. I've made his mountain into desolation and his heritage into, you know, in a place where wild animals can kind of prowl. So many of Mepharshim quote this pasuk in Malachi. And the pasuk is describing the Yaakovites were brothers, meaning what? Even when they appear as brothers, even when neither looks better than the other, when Esav's children are acting the same way that we're acting, or vice versa, Hashem says, "I love Yaakov and I despise Esav." Why is that? I mean, they were twins; they had the same childhood, they had the same parents. They looked alike in some ways. It seems, you know, there was a way that they could pass for one another. You know, one was hairy, one was smooth. And in terms of, you know, Yitzchak loved Esav, Rivka loved Yaakov, there was something about Esav which didn't seem appealing. And yet, the love Hashem says to Yaakov is a love which remains regardless. Even when we can say, Hashem, why are we any better than Esav? Hashem says, I love you and I hate Esav. Because that, again, that love remains forever, no matter what. So the on Yom Kippur, one of the major and unique avodas of Yom Kippur was the avoda of the two seirim, the two goats. And we know that the Kohen Gadol would have two goats in front of him. They looked exactly the same. They're bought for the same price. They should be the same size. They should be the same age. Everything about them looked the same. Identical goats. And the avoda was, he draws a lottery. He has a little box and he puts his hand inside. And one card says on it, La Hashem, one says La Azazel. And he pulled the right hand and his left hand, and whichever goes in front of him, he put the paper on the goats, and that's the designation where the goats will go. The Midrash compares these goats to Yaakov and Esav. And the goat that goes Azazel is looked at as Esav's goat, and it's there to atone for Yaakov, but it's a goat that represents Esav. And the goat that goes Lashem, the goat that will be slaughtered and the blood will be sprinkled in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that goat associates with Yaakov. So the way we can understand this is really the same way. They have the same exact appearance, they look exactly the same, and Hashem says, no, but one of you is going off the cliff, and one of you I'm taking into my dear Beis HaMikdash. But that's how it looks, even though you both look the same, because I love Klal Yisrael, I love Yaakov, and I despise Esav. And the truth is, there's a question here, which is that it's done through a lottery, it's very weird. The way that he chooses, he doesn't look at the two goats and say, you look like a holy one, you look like a not-so-holy one, I'll throw you off and I'll keep you. There's a lottery done. A goro, he sticks his hand in, he pulls out the cards, it's random, and he puts it down. And what's the idea of a lottery? The whole concept of a lottery is that the results don't seem to have any rhyme or reason. It seems to be totally random. The same way, if Klal Yisrael is acting just like Esav is acting, if we're doing Averos like Esav, so we don't see any rhyme or reason why should Hashem love us. Why is that? Just like a lottery, there's no rationale in terms of which one turns into which goal. We don't know, just it was random. He put his hands in, that's what happened. And the answer is that sometimes we look at the love of Hashem to Klal Yisrael as if there is no apparent reason. It's just there. It's there no matter what. It's been there ever since time of the Avos. It's even when, you know, we don't see why it should be there, and that love continues on forever. So the whole avoda of these two goats on Yom Kippur was trying to highlight this idea. It was showing that there's a concept of a lottery, that things on the outside don't look so like much logic's involved. I don't see a reason for it. But on the inside, deep down, there's a love which we have towards Yaakov, and there's a hatred towards Esav. That doesn't change.
Can I ask you a question? You said the first goat, the goat that goes Lazazel, was somehow related to Yaakov.
Well, it's related to Esav, but it makes a kapara for Yaakov.
Right. And what happens to this? What's the function of the second goat?
So another goat, it's also a kapara, but in a very specific way. I mentioned last week, the kapara of the first goat, of the goat that goes to Hashem, is just on Tumas Mikdash Mikadash, of the Tumah of the Beis Mikdash. It's a very, very specific kapara. Now, the one that goes off the cliff is actually the kapara for all of our Averos. So they both function as a kapara. But the fact that one is chosen to go into the Beis Mikdash means this is the one that I love, as it were. And the one that's thrown off the cliff is the one that I hate. And we don't have any good reason for that, but that's what we do. Because we're showing the love for Klal Yisrael knows no reason, there's no rhyme or reason to it for necessarily. It's a deep-seated love which has been there from the Avos, and it doesn't change.
Another question.
Yeah.
So we're talking about, I love you and I hate Esav. Who's saying that?
Hashem.
But
Hashem speaking.
Hashem loves everybody. That's
not... Interesting. I guess there's different levels of how Hashem regards different types of people. I mean, Esav is somebody that Hashem says is involved constantly in trying to bring down Hashem's purpose in this world. So that's where hatred comes from. If I suffer the tshuva, I take him in also. I guess that's the point. It's an interesting question. I'm not sure. But the pasuk, it says, as Esav sanisi. I hate Esav. That's Hashem speaking. So there's a certain level of good in Klal Yisrael, and this is the point I really want to get to. There's a certain level of good in Klal Yisrael, which is not evident on the outside all the time. It's not apparent. We don't see any rhyme or reason on the outside, why the good is there. We might look the same as our non-Jewish neighbors doing the things that they do sometimes, the way that we act. But yet Hashem says, you're La Hashem and you're La Zazo. And that's how it goes. Because the difference between the Jew and the Esav, you know, person is it's beyond perception. It's so deep in the person, we don't really perceive it. There's a story that someone came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Letzal, and asked him, you know, who's better, a goy who's a tzaddik or a Jew who's a rasha? Which one's better? And he said, well, we can look at it in two ways. In potential, the Jew is better. In actuality, the goy is better in that situation. Because there's a potential in a Jew which can go so far beyond anything any non-Jew can do, which is deep down, we can't always see it, but the potential is there. That was put into us permanently by the Avos and Imahos, and that's there. So bekoach, in potential, it's there. But yet, if the goy is the one who's doing good things, the Jew is not. So in actuality, right now, in front of us, we see the goy is a tzaddik is better. That's the Lubavitcher Rebbe said. But we have in ourselves this great potential to do so much good, to be such great people, but it doesn't always come out on the surface. It's deep, you know, it's behester, it's hidden, but it's there. It's definitely there. And this is what makes the sharp divide between a Jew and a goy. It's not in what we do, it's more in the potential within. We have potential to do so much more if we tap into that potential. And this is created by the Avos, it's immutable, it's put inside of us, and this is the Avas Hashem, this love of Hashem that we see at all times. It's not because of what we're doing, it's because of who we are. And we don't always know who we are. We don't always get that. We don't get exactly who we are and what potential that we have. But this is the idea of the Bechira of Klal Yisrael, Bechir Ba'am Lo Yisrael, B'Ahava, Hashem chooses us with love, is that love is for us no matter what, because of the essence of a Jew, not because of the action of doing any particular time. And that began with Abraham, and move on from there. So actions may not show this, but it's there. It's certainly there. So Yom Kippur comes along, and one of the greatest merits we have in Yom Kippur is to tap into this love. The pasuk says, "Al kol peshayim techasa ahava." Love can cover up all iniquity. You know, when you love somebody, you can overlook their shortcomings and their flaws. If there's true love there. When Hashem truly loves Klal Yisrael, that gives Hashem the ability to say, you know, I see that you're doing things which are not so appropriate, but yet the love I have kind of trumps that. I can overlook that because of that deep love. So if you want to understand the kapara of Yom Kippur, it's very different than just the normal tshuva process. The normal tshuva process is that I'm working on a particular issue. I regret what I've done. I do vidui, I confess it, I commit to improve. And Hashem says, okay, I'm going to erase that one, I'll erase this one, and all the bad marks in the book get erased. But there's a much broader type of kapara, which is Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is, well, if we can tap into this deep love of a Jew in Hashem, then that kind of covers up everything. Akol b'Hashem t'chasa ava, and everything is gone. So the love is there, but we have to sort of engage or trigger that love. And I want to talk more about how we can get there. I mean, so if we're trying to say that this day is all about the love of Hashem for Klal Yisrael, Hashem says there's an innate good in you, and I love that. And if I can just, you know, tap into that, I'll forgive everything because that love is there. So the question is, what do we do? What's our role in this? How do we take that love which is there and develop it? So for that, I want to look at source number two. This is a Medrash Rabbah. In Bracious, also back on the discussion of Yaakov and Esav, actually, same place. And this is Vayomer Yaakov Rivka Imo. Yaakov said to Rivka, his mother, this is when Yaakov was going in to trick Yitzchak at the brachos. So he's supposed to dress up as Esav. He says, you know, I'm smooth and my brother is very hairy. So my father's going to figure out who I am. He's going to get upset. He's going to curse me instead of bless me. This is Anuch Ish Chalak. I'm a smooth person. Kamoda Amar, like it says in the Pasuk. So the Medrash now tells us that this idea of Yaakov being a smooth person is connected to the idea of Ki Chelek Hashem Amo, that Hashem, that Hashem's nation, that Klal Yisrael, Hashem's nation, is a Chelek of Hashem. We have a portion of Hashem. We are a portion of Hashem. We are Hashem's lot, as it were. So the word Chalak means to be, it means smooth, but the Medrash is actually, you know, reinterpreting it to mean Chelek. We are Hashem's portion. And then they give a mashal. Rabbi Levi Omer, mashal, there's a mashal. Lekavots v'kireach. There's like a hairy person and a bald person. Shayu omdim al-svasagor. They're both standing at the edge of a threshing floor where they're threshing wheat. So you had all this, like, all the waste of the wheat kind of flying around in the air, all the shells and the chaff. Vala hamotz v'kavots. So the motz, the chaff, the waste of the wheat, gets stuck on the hairy guy that blows away, v'nistabuch v'saru, and it gets tangled in his hair. Allah hamotz b'kireach, but then the chaff goes on to the bald guy, v'nasin yad al rosho, and he just kind of wipes it right off. You know, there's nothing for it to get caught in. So one of the advantages of being bald would be that. You know, nothing gets caught in your hair. V'heviru kach Esav Rasha. So that's like Esav and Yaakov. Esav Rasha, mislachik bavonos, kol yimosesha. Esav gets dirtied with sin all year long. He's the hairy guy. Velo mayachaper. He has no way to atone for himself because it gets totally tangled into who he is, into his essence. Avo Yaakov mislachik bavonos, kol yimosesha. Yaakov gets dirty with the virus all year long as well. And we're not perfect. We make mistakes. V'vo yom kippurim. Yom Kippur comes, and now we have a way to atone because we're like Yaakov, like the bald guy. So what's this Medrash saying? The Medrash is saying that there's a big difference between Yaakov and Esav. When Esav does an Aveira, it gets tangled to him, it gets stuck in him, it impacts his essence. So Esav in his essence, whatever he does, his Aveiros will be part of who he is. And it's part of who you are. You can't really do tshuva on it because it's me. It's not just something I did. It becomes me. Whereas Yaakov is this smooth, this bald guy, which means that the veras that he does, they don't actually become part of him. They remain external to him. So he does an avera, and it's an action I did which is wrong, but my essence, I'm good. My essence is pure, my essence is good. I do things sometimes that are not correct, but it doesn't change who I am. Like we said, the Jew has within him or her the koach, the potential to be great from the avos, and that doesn't change. So you might do things on the outside that are wrong, but that's only external. So this idea of chelok Hashem, we are the chelok Hashem. It means that we have within us a chelok Hashem. The neshama is a part of Hashem within us. It remains pure. That's who we are. That's what the avos brought down into us, and that can change. Our actions can change. But we can brush off the averos. Tshuva, Yom Kippur, allows us to say, these averos, they're all external, I can just wipe it right off. It comes right off. When it gets tangled up in your hair, like Esav, like this, the hairy guy in the Medrash, so then you can't just, you have to yank it, you can't just clean it right off. It becomes part of your essence. There is a idea in the Gemara brings. It says, again, also in the same story with Yitzchak and Yaakov. So when Yaakov approached Yitzchak, and Yitzchak was kind of like concerned, is this really Esav? I'm not really sure. He looks different, he sounds a little different. So it says, V'yarech etzriach begadav, it says that he smelled the smell of his clothing. So Yaakov was wearing Esav's clothing, and Yitzchak smelled it, and it smelled like Esav. But Chazal make a drasha here, and Chazal say, don't read it as begadav, don't read it as clothing, read it as bogdav, read it as the traitors. Those people who are traitors, who come to rebel against Hashem. And you read the pasuk, V'yarech etzriach bogdav, that Yaakov smelled the aroma of the traitors of Klal Yisrael. So what does that mean? So the Medrash brings down stories of a few different Jews who did very, very treacherous, terrible things, and then they did tshuva. And the point being that a Jew, even the traitors amongst us, deep down are good. We have tov in our essence. And therefore Yaakov, when he was smelling, he smelled something deeper than the surface. He said that even the traitors of Klal Yisrael have a beautiful aroma. That's what Yitzchak did. Yitzchak was able to sense this. Yitzchak sensed that even those people in Klal Yisrael who do terrible things, deep down they have tov, and I can smell even the beautiful aroma of even the traitors of Klal Yisrael. It also relates to the drasha Chazal make on Shir HaShirim. You know, we know in Rosh Hashanah time we talk a lot about the rimon, the pomegranate. And we know the concept that the pomegranate represents mitzvot. It's a very famous concept. The Chazal, the way they phrase it, is that afil rekanin shebehen, even the emptiest of Jews, Mleim mitzvos karimon, they're full of mitzvos like a pomegranate. I mean, even the most empty Jew, look at this person and say, there's no mitzvos here, there's no Torah, there's no chesed, there's no nothing. But deep down, every single Jew is full of mitzvos. That's what the Gemara tells us. So, which means what? That the chet that we do is only something which the Maral calls b'mikra, it's external, it's a coincidence, it just kind of happens. But it's not us. It's just an accessory that we do, but it's not who we are. We are good in our essence. Our chet is just something which is extra. It's external to us. One more medrash here. Again, same idea, number three. It says in Shir HaShirim, Ka'ali Kedar Kiryo Shlomo, that it's like the tents of Kedar, like they're like Arab tents. Kiryo Shlomo, like the curtains of Shlomo. So the Medrash says, Malkali Kedar, what does it mean? It's like the curtains of the tents of the Arabs. The tents of the Arabs are dirty on the outside, but they're beautiful on the inside. So to a Talmud Chacham, even if the outside they don't look so nice, they might be poor, they might be wearing clothing which is not so nice. They're filled up on the inside with Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, all sorts of Torah. And then it says, you might say, well, you can't wash the tents of the Arabs. They're dirty and they remain dirty. You might think a Jew also, you can't wash a Jew. It's like the curtains of Shlomo. Ma Shlomo hazos, mislachleches, v'chozeres, and mislabenes, just like these curtains. I'm getting it dirty, but you can put it through the laundry and they get clean. So to Israel, and they get cleaned. So again, it's a very similar point that the tents of the Arabs, they can't get clean. Once they get dirty, they remain dirty. It becomes part of what it is. It becomes its essence. But a Jew, if we get dirty, it's just like you get a little bit of a stain on a shirt. You can wash it right off. But the purity of the soul remains the same. And the truth is, tshuva would not be possible if this wasn't true. Meaning that we go into tshuva because we know there's good inside. If I was rotten to the core, then there's no tshuva process because my averos are me, and I have nowhere to go to change. Tshuva means I'm returning to something. What am I returning to? I'm returning to, could be the purity of myself, and my neshama, and the purity within. That's tshuva can be. Somebody who is evil to the core, there's no tshuva because where are they going with it? I spoke about recently in a different shiur, the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya, who it's a long story who he was. But he was a terrible Rasha who did tshuva. And the Gemara says that he died through his tshuva. He was crying. He died because of his tshuva. And different Mefarshim, we should ask the question, how do you die from crying for tshuva? How does that kill a person? So the Maral says, because the evil was so much at his core, once he tore it out, there was nothing left of the person. Meaning he was somebody, he was actually a Jew, but he was such a Rasha, the evil lifestyle was like defined who he was. So he cried in tshuva, and Hashem erased it. But once he erased it, he was gone. There was nothing left of the person because it had gone so deep into who he was. These are routines. So this allows tshuva. Now, if we had no good within, we couldn't change. We have nothing to do. Because we're essentially good, so we have the ability to change. I mean, Hashem will say, I'll tap into the purity of your soul, and I can erase everything else on the surface. So Hashem loves us for our essence, who we are. In our essence, we find the love for Hashem. That's our essence then. If our essence is good, our essence is pure, that means that Hashem loves us for our essence, and then in our essence, we find that love for Hashem within. The Gemara says, this is the tefillah, I think, of Rabbi Alexandri. He used to say, Retzoneinu la'asos etzon avinu shebashamayim. Our deepest will is to do Hashem's will. So the question is, well, then why don't we do it all the time? So he says, who's stopping us? And he says two answers. Shivud Malchios, the nations around us that subjugate us get in our way. And then he says, Vesor Shabi'isa, the yeast in the dough which refers to the Yitzhara. That's the mashal he uses. So we deep down, all you're going to do is serve Hashem properly. Our deepest ratzon is Lasos Vesan Avinu Shabashemayim. What gets in our way? Well, we have external problems with the nations around us trying to stop us from what we're doing and influences from the outside. And the Yitzhara gets in our way as well. But he's pointing out what our essence is. Our essence is just that desire to serve Hashem properly. Everything else, there's external things that stop us. But the deepest desire of every single Jew is to serve Hashem. So the same point within that we discussed, that Hashem looks towards and loves, that point within us just wants to serve Hashem. It's a mutual bond created by the Avos. It's there. So on Yom Kippur, our goal, I think, is to try to hit this point the best we can. Yom Kippur is a day where we try to strip away all the external things that stop us. We look at ourselves and we say that, I have a lot of challenges. Everyone has their failures and shortcomings. Everyone has it. But deep down on Yom Kippur, the goal we should try to reach throughout the day is that I want to feel in myself that burning desire to do what's right, to serve Hashem. It's there. Every one of us has it. It's inside. Yom Kippur is the day on the calendar which is most dedicated to this purpose. It's a day where we have the ability to go deep within ourselves and touch that point and say, all I want to do is serve God properly. That's it. You're digging down under all the schmutz within and you're going deep into yourself. Just like the Kohen Gadol goes in Yom Kippur, Lifnai Lifnim, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. that's symbolic for us, that we can go into the deepest recesses of ourself. You know, on a certain level, we are a Beis HaMikdash, and we have the famous concept, Asuli Mikdash Hashchanti Besocha, make me Mikdash, I'll dwell within you. We are a Beis HaMikdash. Every Jew is a Beis HaMikdash. We have our external courtyards, and we have our Kodesh, and we have our Kodesh HaKodashim. And usually we only have access to certain parts of ourselves because, you know, we're limited. In Kippur, the same day that we can access the real Kodesh HaKodashim and the Beis HaMikdash, that means in ourselves there's an ability that we can access the depths of ourselves. If we use the day properly, if we dive in with sincerity, we work on tshuva, we can actually get into places in our own personal soul that we don't feel the rest of the year. And we can't access the rest of the year. And if we get in there, what should we find in there? And the way the Gemara is describing it, we should find that point that just screams out, my will is just to do what Hashem wants me to do. My will is just to do the right things. That's my will. That's that point deep down. It's buried within. We can't see it. That's why, like we said, it's a lottery because on the surface it's not apparent. But deep down Hashem says, I know it's in there. And that's why I love you so much, because I know that point is there. And if you could just tap into it, you'll see how much you can do. So we can find this in ourselves, then all the averos will just kind of fall away, like that, like the case of the bald guy, you know, everything, we'll see, it's all external. Because deep down, all we want to do is serve God, and everything else was just kind of outside things that got in our way. So the kapara of Yom Kippur really comes from this point, it's that if I can touch that part of myself, then I see very clearly these averos aren't me. If that's not me, then I'm not responding, you know, they're gone, then they're off the record, because that's not who I am, it's not part of me. If I can reach this point, so the virus still remain part of who I am, and then each one has to be kind of erased one by one. But if the Avodah Yom Kippur brings us to really feel the deep down desires that we have to do what's right and to be good people and to serve Hashem properly, so all the virus just kind of, well, they melt right off. That's how I view it. That's the Yom Kippur is the day we talk about tahara, purity. So the idea of tahara is not just forgiveness, it's that we become purified because everything just kind of falls away, everything just kind of dissolves. That's the power of the day. So that's just like this ish kiriyah, this bald person, that everything just kind of falls right off. I want to look at one other point here. This is in source number 4. It's the Rambam. I don't remember if I've done it in this class before or not, but it's worthwhile doing it again if not. This is a Rambam which I always find astounding when I learn it. The Rambam is found in Hilchos Gerushin, of all places, the laws of divorce. And he's dealing with a very serious halacha. We know the marriage and divorce is one of the most serious halachas that we have out there. You know, dealing with ish, mamzerus, you know, very, very serious averus. And the Rambam discusses over here a halacha, which is really based on the discussion that we're having right now. And again, you may be aware of the halacha, maybe not, but it's a very, very powerful Rambam. The discussion of the Rambam is forcing a man to give a get. We know this is an issue that comes up, unfortunately, when you have an aguna who's not getting a gift from her husband, and there is a concept, we don't really do it nowadays in America, I don't think we should. It was done in the times in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis Din, you know, in times of Beis HaMikdash, so you could force a man to give a get, you know, by force, physically, to give a get. And the Rambam says, Misha din nosen shekofenos selegaris ishto. When halacha mandates that we're supposed to force a man physically to give a get, lorotz legaris, if he doesn't want to, a Beis Din is allowed to go and hit him, beat him, until he says the words "Rotza ani," I desire. V'yichtav a get, and then if he says that, they write the get, who get kasher, and the get is kasher. So then Rambam asks the question: we know a get requires has to be done based on his own volition. If he's being forced into it, it's not a valid get. Why should this be good? So it's wonderful that we beat him with a baseball bat and he says, until he says uncle basically, he cries mercy, you know, give the get. But why is that considered a get given based on his own free will and desire? It's really not. He's been beaten to do it. And the Rambam says, he says, no, you're only considered coerced if you're forced to do something which the Torah does not require you to do. Like for instance, let's say I really want to buy you know, something that you have in your house, and you don't want to sell it to me. So I come over with my baseball bat, and I say, sell it to me or else. Okay, buy it. So that's not a valid sale in halacha, because it's not under coercion. You could take me to a Beis Din in words and get back the property. But why is that? Because that's the Torah doesn't command you to sell me that item, so therefore if you sell it to me, it's called coercion. Aval, and this is the key line, Mishitakfo yitzro hara levato mitzvah. When your yitzro hara comes and forces you to not do a mitzvah, or do an avera, And you are beaten until you do some, the matter you're supposed to do. Or you distance yourself from the Isser. This is not considered coerced from him. Rather, it's the opposite. Why was he doing the Aveira? It's because he was being coerced by his Yetzer Hara. And now we're releasing him from the Yetzer Hara. This guy doesn't want to give a get. But he's supposed to. Halacha is he supposed to give this get? He doesn't want to. But he wants to be a Jew. He wants to do what's right. He wants to do all the mitzvos. And not do Averos. But Yetzer Hara is takvo, and the Yetzer Hara is forcing him. So when he is beaten until his Yetzer Hara gets weakened, and he says, I want, Kavar Gershot Sono, this is considered a free will divorce. So let's put it in other words, but it's an incredible point, and it's really based on the Mishnah. But the Rambam is telling us that this guy is sitting here screaming, I don't want to give her a get, I don't want to do it, I don't care what the Beis Din says, he's been rejecting the Beis Din's subpoenas for months, and they put him in Cherem, he doesn't want to do it. And suddenly they come in with the mob, they start beating him. And then he says, Rotsani, I want. So Rambam says, well, who's speaking right now? Until this point, that wasn't him. That was the Yetzer Hara speaking. That wasn't him. That was his Daito Hara. That was the Yetzer Hara, which forced him into the Avera. But now that he's being beaten, it weakens the Yetzer Hara, the Rambam says. And when he speaks, he's speaking from his own free will, because that's who he is. He, in his essence, he wants to be a Jew and do the mitzvot, not do Averas. That's what he wants to be. And now that he's speaking, who's talking now? The real person is talking now. I mean, it sounds like a beautiful idea, and you think, well, that's a nice Musar idea. The Rambam's saying this as a halacha and hilchos gerushin, which to me, that's always the biggest surprise, that this would be a valid get. She can get remarried, and kids are not mamzerim. This is a real deal. So this is telling us that even halacha regards this to be our essence. It's not just a nice idea that we're giving. This is actually taken into very serious halachic consideration. So we're saying that the essence of the Jew is Rotze Lios Mi'Yisrael. I want to be a Jew. I want to do all the mitzvos. And everything else that I'm saying, right, even until now, this guy has been stubborn and he's avoided everything the Beis Din has tried to do. That was all external. That wasn't who he is. It's not his essence. That's the Yetzer Hara. And he himself, once we start beating him up, and the Yetzer Hara gets a little bit scared or weakened, then he says, I want to give the get. We say, that's you speaking. You really want to give that get, and we give the get. That's the point the Rambam makes. So this really speaks to the essence of a Jew. And what I really find amazing, and I mention sometimes gematrias. The gematrias are good. You know, if you understand the idea, a gematria is always like the icing on the cake. It's the cherry on top. Just to throw gematrias randomly doesn't really show that much. But I saw a sefer quote that the gematria of Yom Kippur is these words, Rotze Ani, I want, I want. Exactly the gematria of Yom Kippur. Because the idea is this, that Yom Kippur is about us screaming out to Hashem, I want. I'm reaching into the essence of myself, and I'm saying, I want Hashem. I want to be good, I want to grow, I want to serve you properly, I don't want to do all these things I've been doing. So that's Rotze Ani. So just like, you know, this man gets beaten until he says Rotze Ani, Yom Kippur, in a sense, you know, beats us down. Yom Kippur weakens us, and it makes us take stock of ourselves. Until we say those words, Rotze Ani, that I want. So we can succeed in Yom Kippur, and this is obviously a very big avoda that we're talking about. But what it does is that Yom Kippur becomes more than just a day where I'm looking through my specific averos one by one. Okay, I did this, I shouldn't do that, which is certainly part of it. That gets us there. But it's a sweeping tahara of a person, of Avas Hashem, that ultimately what we're trying to get to is Avas Hashem, and that should come out not just in potential, it should come out in reality in Yom Kippur. The whole year long, we have it all in potential, in a way which can't be seen, it's not apparent. But in Yom Kippur, that Ratzon within ourselves comes out, should come out, you know, in the open, between us and Hashem at least. And at that point, we say this pasuk, Kol Pashaim Techas Ava, that the Ava, the love, covers up all the sin. We scream out to Hashem in Rotze Ani, and Hashem says, I want you. I want Hashem, and Hashem wants us. That's how Yom Kippur works. It's very interesting that in the Shemona Esrei, the one bracha where we talk about Hashem wanting something is HaRotze B'Shuvah. Hashem wants tshuva. So Hashem wants us to do. We don't say Hashem wants us to have refuah or parnasa or shalom, but we do say HaRotze B'Shuvah. Hashem wants tshuva. Something Hashem wants from us. The Sfasem says something interesting. He says that when the Torah describes Aaron HaKohen going into the Kodesh HaKadashim, so he uses the words Bezos Yavo Aaron El HaKodesh. With this, Aaron should go into the Kodesh. And many of Mefarshim talk about what's the this. You know, and the simple meaning means, you know, with these karbanos. But many Sfarim have their different take on what the this is. What's the way to enter into Kodesh? What's the this? So Sfasem says that you should go in with, he calls it Bir HaPanimius, with clarifying your essence. Because that's what we're talking about. That the way you enter into Yom Kippur, it's a day where we're supposed to clarify what our essence really is. That there's my essence and then there's my externals. My externals might not look so great, but my essence is good. That's what Yom Kippur is all about. He then, the Sfasem also, he then quotes from, he relates another halacha to Yom Kippur. It says about, we know when we kasher, I think it's talking there about putting the mikvah. We put a kli in the mikvah. So if it's a rusty kli, you have to take the rust off first. And that it says, ach es azav. It learns it from the word ach. It says, only the gold and the silver. So Chazal say it means if you want to kasher a kli, you have to take off the rust from the kli. So he says also Yom Kippur as well, we have to take the rust off ourselves, and then what comes out is that shining kli on the bottom. That's how Sfasem describes it. We remove the chaluda, the rust, and through that, the tahara comes. So Yom Kippur, really our job is just to simply discover who we are. That's what I'm getting at. Now, if we can discover who we are, so then we've done it. Now the stuff we're made of is good stuff. You know, it's that tov within, it's that essence that the Avos made for us. It's the essence that's passed on generation to generation, every single Jew. If we can just find that point of that rutzon, that I desire, my deepest desire is to serve Hashem, that's what we go for. The word rutzon, desire, is the word rutz, to run. And it's described because we run to that which we desire. So rutzon is desire, rutz run. What you desire is what you run towards. So we have many desires at very different levels. But if we're able to discover that our deepest desire is to do the right thing and serve Hashem, so that impacts our whole year, because then we start running towards those places, people, activities, actions that Hashem desires, and then we'll run away from everything else. Externally, we don't always understand why we're doing what we're doing, but in the essence of the person is what generally drives us. So our Yom Kippur, the overarching focus should be to try to tap into our own selves and say, at some point during the day, I should feel that even though it's a difficult day, and I'm fasting, and I'm tired, and I'm in shul for hours and hours and hours on end, but I have a desire to be here, I desire to grow, and when we feel that, we ignore the fast, and we ignore the difficulties of shul, because we feel that what we're doing here is connecting to Hashem. We're doing our best to find the inner part of ourselves and connect. So, wish everyone a Gemar Chasima Tova, a good year.
Thank you,
and you should be able to tap into that part. That's the day.